The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
It's Pharrell on a bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out a bad seat, a broken day, a bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad attitude, bad taste, bad life, bad dude, bad breath, bad attitude, bad vibes. It's the FOTB pod, baby. Everybody's doing it, they just won't admit it. I'm chilling the most on the back deck of the Pharrell Palatial with Boston, my 120-pound beast, Cujo of a dog, and Dr. Pete. Dr. Pete is here. Dr. Pete is a legend in the area. Dr. Pete takes care of thousands of people with their problems. Dr. Pete is constantly dealing with people's pain issues, all kinds of pain issues. You name it. Broken bones, broken necks, broken backs, broken knees, broken ankles, broken feet, broken femurs, broken tibias, broken tibia plateaus, broken hands, broken hearts. Pete has a huge office in one area of where I live in North Jersey. He got so huge, he opened another one. So he has franchised out his services because people suffer. And when people suffer, they call Pete. The problem Pete has in his life is he has a hot wife that competes with him at the same job. They are both pain management doctors. They are both chiropractors. They are both solving the community's needs and problems, and she is better looking than him. Thus, a lot of people choose to go to her instead of him, which I find to be problematic as much as the pain. Dr. Pete, how are you today? Fine, sir.
I am doing terrific. Thank you, buddy. What's going on?
So, when you were a kid and you decided to go to college and you decided what you wanted to do for a living, I think the story I remember was, because we used to drink a lot together, you told me about Life College. Is that about right?
That's
in Atlanta,
right.
Georgia?
That's right.
So, you ended up in Atlanta, Georgia, but you had grown up in North Jersey, right?
New York, actually. Born in Manhattan. Lived in the Bronx area for a little bit on the Grand Concourse.
Where were you born? In what hospital?
NYU.
Oh, at NYU.
NYU, yeah.
Did you ever apply to college at NYU and get turned down?
I did not, no.
I applied to college at Notre Dame and was refuted in less than 2 weeks.
That's about how long it took for UNC to deny me as well. Because I definitely wanted to go down to Chapel Hill.
Oh, so you wanted to go to North Carolina.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So I got turned down by Notre Dame in 2 weeks, but then I got into Indiana, And that took a lot longer. You know, when you apply to colleges, do you remember it was like a month or two you'd wait to hear from them and then it would come in the mail?
It's like a whole different process now. You either got that big fat package right, or the very little thin letter. That was very disappointing.
When you were in college, before you went to life, did you apply to a bunch of schools? Because I applied to Notre Dame and to Indiana, and then I got into Indiana. But I got to tell you, I wanted to go to Notre Dame because if you go to Notre Dame, I think it's like going to Duke or Stanford. If you go to Notre Dame, you're set for life.
Yeah, it's a name, absolutely.
You could be stupid and still get through Notre Dame, be the dumbest guy at the frat house, but still end up a hustler in life because you could sell the fact that you went to Notre Dame and be successful in some capacity. Would you agree with that?
I so agree with that.
Every guy that I ever knew that went to Stanford, Notre Dame, or Duke, my dad went to Duke. If you go to any of those schools, you will in some capacity be a winner. Do you agree with that?
I agree. I think there's more. All those Ivy Leagues, right? Yale, Harvard, Penn.
Princeton. Brown.
Yeah. You're coming out of those. You're set.
You're going to amount to something.
I would believe so.
Dr. Wall, so when you're a kid growing up in the Bronx, and I knew your father well. I think I knew him pretty well.
Sure did.
Did you end up moving from there to North Jersey?
No, we went from the Bronx to Forest Hills, Queens.
Ooh. First of all, that's out by the tennis center.
That's exactly it.
And then there's also one of the greatest skateboarding parks ever in the world is there.
There is?
Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
There's actually New York's best skateboarding park is in Forest Hill, Queens, right by the tennis center. All the greatest skateboarders that ever came from New York, that's where they skated.
That was there from back in the day, too?
Back in the day.
I had no idea.
It's old school. Like Tony Hawk turned me on to it. That's how I found out about it. I had a lot of those skateboard guys because I met them through Tony doing the stand up for skate parks. So eventually, if you know snowboarders, skateboarders, those BMX bike guys,
it's all over there.
If they come on your show, eventually in some capacity, they'll tell you their stories. And one of the stories I learned a lot about, and you know who told me about it? I think originally it was Tony, but then you know who owned the skate park was the Maloof brothers, who owned the Sacramento Kings and the Palms Casino in Vegas. They were the ones that built it. They built the skate park in Forest Hill, Queens.
Why would they choose Forest Hills?
I think because of the proximity to New York and the proximity to the tennis center, that there would be people there every year and that they would be connected to it in some capacity by going by it, seeing it, and like all those rich people freaking out, seeing kids flying through the air doing tricks on skateboards.
There's always a solid connection between tennis and skateboarding. I've always seen
that. Well, I mean, just rich people. They wanted, I think what they wanted is rich people to see it and to freak out and then to sponsor their tournaments.
Gotcha.
So how old were you when you were living in Forest Hill, Queens?
1, 2 years old. We did 1 year stints in everywhere because we actually moved up to Rockland County. No, so I never actually lived in North Jersey until after I graduated and we moved into Northern New Jersey.
What did your dad do originally to move around like that and then to end up in Rockland County?
So he worked for ABC Television for like 36 years or something like that. And he just kept on moving up and moving up and moving up. And so as he did a little bit better, he found a little bit better of a place to live. We went from the Bronx over to Queens, did a little bit better. And from Queens, we moved up into the burbs and bought ourselves an acre of land and a house.
What did he do at ABC?
So he was a lot in data processing and in finance and stuff. So he was never on TV or anything like that.
It takes a lot of bodies and minds to run ABC and CBS and all that. It's crazy. So when you were a kid, did you found any kind of fascination at all in the fact that your dad worked at ABC, or did he not make it a big deal?
Yeah, no, he never made it a big deal. He started to get bigger and bigger and bigger. He started working longer hours. I used to remember middle of the night, phone calls, 2 a.m., 3 a.m. What does my father do? Like, why is he getting phone calls at 2 o'clock in the morning? He works on a computer, so what is he getting all these phone calls for? But the funny thing was always, he was always like, okay, call Bob. Okay, call Frank. Like, he would never actually do anything. He was like the traffic director, I believe.
And you had, what, one sister?
One sister, yeah, older sister.
How much older was she than you?
3.5, 4 years older.
Okay, so you grow up and basically, in essence, in Rockland County in your teenage years and then high school years?
Yep.
So then, where did you go to high school?
Spring Valley High School.
All right. So then you ended up at Spring Valley. You decide you're going to go for it and apply to these schools. And you applied to North Carolina. And did you get turned down?
Oh, my God. Within seconds.
And then how did you end up deciding to go to Life, of all places in the world? You know, what's funny is that I knew about Life because I lived in Atlanta. So everyone in Atlanta knows about Life College. So I was fully aware of it. I'll bet long before you were. How old are you now?
42.
I got 12 years on you, so I was working in Atlanta when I was probably 30, so you were 18 or something like that. So when you were going to college, I was on the air down there, and I knew of that school already because I lived in Pharrellasaw, Georgia. Isn't it in Kennesaw?
It's in Marietta, which is just down the street from Kennesaw, yeah.
How in God's name did you end up there?
Dude, I have no idea. I was playing baseball at Binghamton because I went undergrad to Binghamton University because a lot of New Yorkers, it's a SUNY school, right? You go to Binghamton, Buffalo, Albany, those schools. So I went to Binghamton. I was playing baseball at Binghamton. I remember we did a college trip. I guess it was junior year. Went down there. And one of the athletic trainers, because I was also an athletic trainer and I was working, doing that kind of gig. And I was like, I'm probably going to like pre-med or something like that. One of the athletic trainers was telling me, she was like, I'm going to chiropractic school in Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm like, what the heck is chiropractic school? I had no idea. So we did a trip down to North Carolina with the baseball team. And I did an interview. I just shot over to Atlanta from North Carolina. I did an interview over there, loved it. And then boom, that was the decision.
Wow. So I know a guy that plays basketball now at Binghamton. So he's a kid that I've played ball with here in the area.
Yeah.
And I knew him when he was in high school, all through high school. So like 9, 10, 11, 12, I knew him. And then he's now full ride up there. He's going to Binghamton, which they're playing like Michigan State.
Yeah, I know. They're D1 now. Back in the day, they were D3. So I'm not that good at baseball.
See, he's a great story because this kid was a hothead. Everybody hated him. When he played, he was a ball hog and he got in arguments and fights. He had a real attitude problem when he played against everyone. It didn't matter who he played with. No one got along with him. The team he played with.
Right.
So everyone hated him. He didn't pass the ball to his teammates, and he got in fights with the other team. I used to tell him, I go, dude, you're a D. Just stop being a D, and you'll be a great player. You got great skill. You're going to be a star player. You're big. I think he's about 6'7 now,
ooh,
real long.
He came out of here in North Jersey?
Came out of here. So he was going locally to school here, and then he ended up at one of the bigger schools, basketball schools, and then he got a full ride to Binghamton. He's playing there now. He'll be a sophomore. So when he played Michigan State this year, he sat on the Pines.
Right.
But he is a really good player. So when he plays back here now, just for fun, I saw him one day, and he showed up to play with us, and he was lighting people up.
Yeah.
He had gotten way better than everybody.
So he grew as a player too, though, or is he still a D?
It was funny because I know his dad really well. His dad used to play with him on open runs on like Saturdays and Sundays. And his dad was violent playing. And his dad could play. But his dad played with a serious mean streak. He got real chippy playing.
A little street ball action.
Real physical.
Yeah.
Very physical. He would get under you and blocking out and stuff. He was violent.
Yeah.
And he meant business. Like, if you got physical with him, he got more physical with you. And it just got worse as the day went on. So the dad was always into it with people. And I think the son
fed off of that. Of course.
And he kind of became that player. So one day I said to him, and I've had these conversations with his dad. So one day he got in a fight with one of my friends, Fuego.
Vinny, of course.
He got in a fight with him, and Vinny told him, you know, he'd break his neck. He said, listen, little man, I'm going to break your neck. You say one more word to me, and I'm going to break your neck. And then we'll see how tough you are then when you're laying on the ground with a broken neck. And then the kid went home and told his dad, and then his dad called me. And his dad's like, you're picking fights with high school kids? And I said, listen, bro, your son's a D. And so we're clear, your son's an asshat, and he's a D, and he had it coming. And so if you pick a fight with the wrong guy, because you want to pick a fight with everybody on the floor, because the one guy that doesn't care how old you are will beat your ass.
Right.
And so that was the end of our, let's just call it, friendship. And then he was very angry at me that I told him that. And I said, listen, you need to face the facts, bro. So I saw the guy like 2 years later, and I was always straight up with him. I'm like, how is the kid doing? I don't really care what you think of me. I'm right. Your son was a D, and you were too. And so you want to fight with us, it ain't going to go well for you. And so you stop coming around. He stopped playing with us. And then, because he played with these monsters, dude, 6'7". You know one of them.
I sure do.
Coco, you're not pushing him around. Some 6 foot guy with an anger problem. So here's the deal. The story gets really good. I didn't see him for 2 years. Then I saw him one day and I was like, oh my God, he had grown.
After high school, he's grown still?
He was about 6'3". And I knew him when he was like in 9th, 10th grade.
Right.
But I didn't know when he transferred to Inglewood High. They play ball there. So he ended up 6'7". So now he's Coco's size, but he's not ripped like him. but he's long and he's got way more game than Coco. He's got a handle, he's got a step back, he's got a drive, he's got a dunk, he's got baseline, he's got turnaround, spin moves, elbow shots. He's got a full game. Coco's more of a monster underneath, and then he shoots 30-footers because he thinks he's a guard. This kid actually can play outside and inside.
Gotcha.
So I saw him one day at the gym, and I'm like, dude, I'm so proud of you. Look at you. Look at the size of you. So he played with me, no dad.
Was he pissed at you?
No. I just said, listen, bro, you remember all the problems? I go, it's simple. I go, I'm glad you've grown up. He was like a man. So when I saw him, he was like a senior.
Right.
I was like, you've grown up. You look like you've added muscle. You got bigger. I go, you stop being a D? And he's like, yeah, man, I'm good. And I said, so what's the deal? And he's like, I got a scholarship to play at Binghamton. I'm like, oh, dude, I'm so proud of you. I'm like, happy for you. Way to go. So let's play. So we played, and he just roasted people.
Trash everybody.
I mean, dude, he was roasting people. And I was really happy for the kid. And he ended up at Binghamton, and he's playing there now.
Nice.
And the kid's a stud. So I was at a high school game one day. Gunner's on the team.
Yeah, I know.
And this guy's other kid is on the JV team.
Okay.
But he's not as good as his brother. His brother's D1. This kid's not going anywhere to play college. He's not good. But I was there, I saw the dad, and he had since like been through a divorce and all this other stuff, and he seemed a lot cooler than he was when he was married. Maybe that's why the guy was a D.
Yeah.
And now he's probably got a lover, and he's cool. So when I saw him, he was really cool. I go, that's Gunner. And he's like, oh my God, he was starting two guard. And he's like, I can't believe it, because he knew him when he was little. And then I said, what are you doing here? And I didn't even know he had another kid.
Right.
He goes, that's my kid. And they were like playing him in a scrimmage. The ninth grade was playing the 10th grade.
Yeah.
And they were getting rubbed. And I started talking to the guy. We sat there the whole game. We got along fine. And I was like, you know what we should do? We should road trip to Binghamton to see the kid play.
Right.
And he said, yeah, let's do it. So we're going to do it next season when he plays. Because this year he never played a minute. He was like a freshman and he sat.
Right. They didn't even get to finish the season anyway.
Never got to finish, but he got to get whacked by Michigan State. He's a big man on campus. He's got a full ride. He's there. He's in the media guide, the whole deal. So I'm really happy for him.
Binghamton, baby. Claim to fame. How about that?
But you played baseball there.
Yeah.
So when you were playing baseball there, what did you play? What position? Because I know you're obsessed with baseball and the Yankees.
I love it. Love it. I was still playing two positions. I was still playing first base and center field. I'm a lefty, but I wasn't a very good hitter, so it was only a matter of time. I started playing, then not playing, and so by junior year, I was already taking up some stuff with athletic training.
Well, if you couldn't hit, how could you make the team?
I was all right. I was D3. When we got up there in 95, there was no fence. You know, it was like a high school field up there.
So anyone that showed up would have made it?
No.
You had to be decent.
Yeah, there were some quality guys on there, so.
But are you just being humble right now and saying I couldn't hit?
No.
You mean major league hit?
Yeah.
But you could college hit?
I could high school hit.
Do you know my guy, Corvallis? Did you ever meet that dude that played on my basketball team? I told you he played at UMass. He was a shortstop.
I don't think so.
He plays semi-pro ball now around here.
Yeah. So that's what I played in Atlanta when I was down over there.
Right. He loves it. Like, he likes baseball way more than basketball. While you were in Binghamton, the whole time you're there, you played. When you went to Atlanta to go to life, did you give up on it? Did you stop playing baseball?
No, actually, that's where I was playing semi-pro down in Atlanta.
But that had nothing to do with life.
No, it had nothing to do with it. I just love baseball. I wanted to play baseball. I was playing baseball 3-4 nights a week for the baseball team, and then I was playing like softball with the church leagues on the other days because I just freaking loved it.
And then at the same time, you decided at some level that you were going to be a chiropractor?
So I went down to Atlanta. I knew I wasn't playing professional baseball. You get to a certain point and you think you're good, and anybody who's ever played sports and probably at my level, like, you think you're good, and you're good in Rockland County-ish, you know? And then you start going to the next level and you're maybe okay, which is, you know, I kind of learned I wasn't that good. When I went down and played semi-pro in Atlanta, these dudes, some of them were coming up the chain.
Right.
Some of them had already, you know, they're already at double A and they were coming down the chain, right? And I'm going up against some of these guys. And I mean, I remember going up against this one pitcher, lefty pitcher, 6'7". I remember his name. O.J. Dubois was his name. This dude was huge and he was menacing. And when he let go of the ball, it's as if his hand was in my chin already. So the ball was going like 1,000 miles an hour, right? And I just remember this one at bat that I had. He threw me what probably was like a 92 mile an hour fastball, but for me it was probably 140 miles an hour on the inside corner of the plate.
Right.
I just laughed. It was no chance, right? Then he threw me a fastball on the outside toward the plate where I threw the bat at it, you know? And I was like, this is ridiculous. I have no chance at this, right? And I'm geared up for whatever fastball he's about to throw at me. And he throws me a nose-to-toes curveball that drops me out of the batter's box. Like, I fall down, the bat hits me in the face, and the ball went over the outside corner of the plate, strike three. Right there, I just wanted to put my helmet right down on the home plate
and quit.
And just walk off the field. And I had a similar game like that on defense, too. Hey, we were in Memphis playing, was it Memphis or Valdosta? We were in a tournament out there, and it was like in the beginning of the season, and we're just getting used to the guys that you're on your team, and we had this stocky Dominican third baseman, and it was either the first or second batter of the game. He was a lefty, full swing, bunt off the tip of the bat type of thing.
Right.
And I'm like, there's no way we're getting this. And this guy comes running down the third baseline, bare hands it, and throws me a ball at 3 million miles an hour that I have never seen in a day in my life. And I catch the ball, he gets the guy out, and I just want to put my mitt right there on first base and just walk right off the field. Because you know, the guys who you're watching, or who you were watching on TV, whether you think you could do that or not, are so much better than the rest of the world. It is unbelievable.
Are you ready for the nation's first and only free 24-hour network dedicated to you, the betting and fantasy sports enthusiast? SportsGrid will provide you with real-time content, statistics, and gaming intelligence unlike anything you've ever seen before. Located both in the heart of New York City and inside the FanDuel Sportsbook at the Meadowlands, SportsGrid is live 18 hours a day, here to serve you, the fanatic. This is SportsGrid. Get on the grid.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I would compare it to my tennis career. So I went to school. I got to go play tennis in college. And when I was in high school, make a long story short, I was really good. I was tall and I was long. And I could hit a serve 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
I would serve as hard as I could, and I was really good at it. 8 or 9 out of 10 times, I could put it in. And so I would go right to the net, and I was so tall.
Nothing was getting by.
I mean, when you hit a serve 100 miles an hour, the return of serve is usually feeble.
Right.
And so they're lucky to get it over the net with any kind of luck. Just to get it over the net. If you watch men's pro tennis, the first serve is the entire game. Because the second serve, they pulverize.
Absolutely.
But the first serve, they're just trying to get contact to get it back over the net and to try to get it deep.
Right.
So in high school, when I was serving big,
no one
could return it. And when they did, it was like a barely getting it over the net. And I'd be at the net and I'd put it away.
That's it.
It was a two-shot game.
This is in Pittsburgh.
In Pittsburgh. And I played on clay, so the game is a lot slower. I could kill anyone in the state. I was really good. But when I went to play in college, I found out real quickly I was the worst guy on the team. Now, I was able to convert it into a lot of a leg. And I got a lot of tail out of it. And I was, you know, playing tennis. And so I got chicks. And that's all that mattered to me is that I was going to school free and I could get laid. So the bottom line is this, is that when I went to practice and guys were hitting the ball 120 miles an hour on baseline forehand and backhand shots, and I couldn't return the shots over the net.
Were you whiffing them or no?
No, I was never whiffing. I was having problems adapting to their power.
Absolutely.
And then I didn't have that. I had one weapon, a serve and a return. Right. I had the ability to serve and volley. And so when I had to start facing 120 mile an hour serves on both forehand and backhand, I couldn't do it. So I quickly was like 12th man. And then I was, that means I'm third doubles.
Right.
And then more than not, I was not even counting. So I was reserve.
Right.
So I was basically a ball boy.
That was me.
I mean, when you don't count toward the score of the match for the team,
right,
you suck. So after 2 years, I said, enough of this. And then I got a broadcast scholarship at Indiana. I got ABC News, the Sam Smith Broadcasting Award. They paid for the rest of my college. So I never paid a day of college of money.
Very
so
nice.
I was lucky. But tennis, it was the same thing. Once I realized I wasn't as good as I thought I was and I was getting my ass pulverized, I was done. The weird thing about it is that when I walked away from the game, I never played it again. Ever.
Really?
I've never played tennis again ever. I played like on vacation once with Gunner and 34C and Chop at this place in San Diego. A couple places I've stayed there, at the Fairmont Grand and at the Beach and Tennis Club in San Diego in La Jolla. They're both tennis clubs.
Right.
So they got great tennis facilities and they got the machines that spit the balls out at you.
That's fun.
So we all sat there and hit strokes, and that's about the only time in 35 years I played tennis since then is that. So like when I was in high school, I loved it and I was good at it, but then I gave it up because I did it too much. I got sick of it and then I sucked.
Right, that's the thing.
When you realize that you sucked compared to the other players and that it was too overwhelming for you, then did you decide I need to get serious about becoming a doctor?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I went to Binghamton. I didn't go to Florida State, Texas, California. I knew I wasn't playing professional baseball as much as I still wanted to play, but yeah, no, I mean, I knew when I got day one on Binghamton's campus that I was going to not be playing baseball for my career. So I thought, you know what, maybe pre-med, something like that. I went with like a bio major. And as I said, I didn't know anything. I became an athletic trainer because that was fun to me, right? So I still wanted to be involved in sports. I loved all sports. I'm like you.
So that was a great in.
Yeah, I was like, all right, so let me start with this. I figured if I'm going to medical school, it'll only help me get into medical school.
Well, what's funny about it is that you, to this day, do it. I'm going to tell the story later of how you got to your rise to glory as a doctor, as a businessman. It's an amazing story. But the thing is that you've always, in the back of your pocket, had the trainer thing because you're Clemson's track and field trainer.
That's right. Yeah, chiropractor for Clemson University's track and field team. Yeah.
That's crazy. So
yeah, it's nuts.
What you were doing when you went to school, you know, love of sports, you're like, I'm going to be a trainer. That's my in. To this day, you're 42 years old and you're still doing it, but you're doing it at a D1 major ACC school, Clemson.
Yeah.
That's no joke. I'm sure their track and field's badass.
Oh my God, it was unbelievable. Because again, I went to Binghamton, right? And I saw some people in semi-pro, but when you get to Division I, cream of the crop, some of the fastest kids I've ever seen in my entire life, breaking records left and right, personal bests, track records, school records. It's insane.
I was on the track team in like ninth grade, and I did pole vault, and I was running down they have like a little
runway. Yeah,
there's a runway, and I had the pole. I could barely carry it. I weighed 140 pounds, and I could barely carry the pole. It's a giant, like, you know what it reminds me of? Of the long stick you use to clean your pool. You know,
with the net at the end. Right?
So it's this giant pole, and I'm running with it, but it's fiber glass. It's like they used to build homes. It's like a pipe, like, right? Isn't that about?
I wish people could see exactly what you're doing right now.
But it's like a small sexual pipe. But I know that I carried it, and it was long, and it was heavy, and it bounces when you're running.
Yeah, yeah.
And I couldn't do it. When I got to the end and placed it into the hole, and you go up, I sucked at it.
Yeah.
But one day I was running, and I was carrying it full speed, 100 miles an hour, and I blew out my quad.
Oh.
I literally tore my quad from top to bottom, and I was done for 6 months.
Yeah, I've seen that.
A quad tear is horrible. When you're at Clemson and you see the best athletes in the country, I mean, let's not talk yet about the world, because some of them go off to Olympic glory, but let's face facts. At a D1 level, they're the best athletes in the country. How many of them have you seen as the trainer at Clemson blow out like calves, knees, ankles, quads, shoulders, even the discus guy, javelin? They all do these crazy, the 4x100. How many of them have you seen these premier pristine athletes blow out?
A lot. First, I need to qualify. I'm not the athletic trainer for Clemson's track and field team. I wouldn't do that to her. She's a terrific athletic trainer. So we're just support staff, and I come in there and I do what I do. But the athletic training staff down there at Clemson is absolutely out of this world. But that being said, with regards to those injuries, it could affect 50 to 75% of the team on certain years. how bad some of the injuries are, because the way these guys train, it is unreal how much time and effort that these guys are putting in. And when I talk about effort, it's not like that 50% effort. Oh, you just go to practice, you're going to have fun. Every single time a guy, a stud girl or a stud guy who's on a Division I team, who's top of the top, every step they take has a purpose. I love seeing that. Like, you don't see that at D3 schools or in high school or the JUCOs and stuff like that. The commitment that some of these guys
have. They mean business.
It's unbelievable. And you can see why they excel. It is next level effort that I see. I picture like two or three specific athletes from Clemson over the last couple of years in my head who I love. Their growth over the 4 years that they've shown, and just every step in track had a purpose. But then they would take that off the track and every step in their life would have a purpose. And it was just awesome to see those guys. But because they're putting that much effort in 100% of the time, you're seeing some of the most gnarly injuries ever.
So what do you have to do to deal with those injuries?
Well, so me personally, again, not being the athletic trainer, I'm not dealing with those acute injuries.
But you're the chiropractor for
the team. Chiropractor.
What's the difference?
What I was working with these kids was to get them to their peak performance.
They need you as much as you need them. It's an entire operation with the training staff.
Yeah.
They need the chiropractor. Every team in the NBA and NHL has one.
Absolutely.
So it's no different in Clemson.
Absolutely. So what we're trying to do, what I was trying to do, was trying to get to them to their peak performance, right? We're trying to create perfect balance in their body. We're trying to make sure that those muscles are firing exactly when they need to be doing it, how they need to be doing it. I was doing a lot of my soft tissue work, and I mean, in detail, I do a specific technique that got me hired at Clemson called active release technique, or ART. And what we're trying to do is break up scar tissue, break up adhesions, lengthen these muscles. Tom Brady talks about this stuff with his guy all the time, about pliability and making sure that the muscles are prepared for the amount of stress that you're going to put on them when you're doing it.
You've done some of that stuff to me.
Of course. That's my thing.
But I've had injuries, bad basketball injuries.
Have you told that story ever?
Well, we'll talk about some of my injuries. I know that you've done one of them. I can't remember what it was, but it was in the shoulder blade area where I literally had pain so bad in that. I call it like the scapula area.
That is. It's it. The rhomboids that attach your shoulder blade to your spine over there.
And it affected everything because I shoot with that arm. Yeah. And I was literally in agony and it affected my neck.
Yes.
It affected my arm. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't do anything. And I remember you putting the most violent amount of physical pressure and like pounds per square inch of pressure. It was like having a car parked on my shoulder blade with your hand in there, and I was screaming in pain in your office, and you drove that in there and held it there for like a minute.
That's right.
And then you let go and then give me like that mercy minute. Is that like the kind of thing you're talking about?
It's a different technique than ART. That's a little bit of trigger point work. Everybody who's listening, they probably get those knots.
Right.
They're like the size of meatballs in their shoulders and everything like that. So I use that trigger point method to try to get rid of those knots.
But what's the difference between that and the ART?
So ART is more, it's an active movement technique designed to break up scar tissue and adhesion, right? I could still do that on the normal population, you know, the weekend warriors and stuff like that. But high-end level athletes and people who move a lot develop scar tissue, adhesions, and all that type
right.
of stuff. So that technique is more specifically to break that up and work that out.
So from the standpoint of injuries, because I play tons of basketball, and I have guys that have had knee surgeries and ankle surgeries and tendons torn in their ankles. I broke my hand. All these things lead to scar tissue that's in there permanently that has to be broken up. I constantly hear guys say they have tendonitis from scar tissue and problems after the fact,
after
a surgery, and that it lingers and gives them problems for like the rest of their life.
Yeah.
Is that about right?
That's like, right.
But do you, as a doctor, feel that the population, the everyday, you talked to him, weekend warrior, the everyday Joe, the everyday working man and woman that just gets injured in their daily life. Like 34C slips walking down the driveway with the dog in the winter, taking the dog for a walk and slips and pulls out her back. Do you see way more injuries to everyday people and weekend warriors that play basketball and that play softball than you do the D1 athletes that you're dealing with that have these crazy injuries that are career-defining injuries?
Yeah, I would have to say so. I would say I'm going to see more, let's call mom-and-pop weekend warrior injuries, just because most of my patients, if they're sitting behind a computer 10 hours a day, they have to commute to and from the city an hour and a half a day. They're not, their bodies aren't prepared for that. But again, some of these guys who are in their 40s and 50s still think they're 18 years old and they're going to go out on the weekends. They're going to play basketball with you. They're going to go at 100% and their hamstrings are going to snap because their bodies aren't prepared for that. You're sitting with your legs bent the entire time. That hamstring is half the length. And then you want to go use that hamstring at 100%, you're going to blow that out.
Let me ask you a question. Hold that thought. Very important, because I have early Alzheimer's. I will forget this question. So I have a problem now, and you talk about sitting at your job all day and people start developing problems. I think I'm developing that problem. What happens is that I sit in a chair for hours at a time filming TV shows or doing radio shows. And as you know, I've had multiple ass surgeries. I've sat on a butt pillow at my show for well over, I'd say, 15 years. So now I have been sitting upstairs in Chop's room doing TV every day at the Ferrella Palatial. And I've been having, so I had to put a pillow on there. No problems with my arse. But the problem I'm having is I'm noticing my legs and they go numb. Like my calves go numb, my hamstrings and quads go numb, my feet go numb, because I'm like sitting like this for hours.
All day long.
I guess the question is, am I dying?
You're not dying.
What is the problem? I feel like
you're
I have frozen feet, you know, frozen leg, blood flow. Like they're numb. I can't even walk.
Because you are compressing the blood vessels going down to your
extremities. So what do you do for that?
You got to get up. You got to move.
And our bodies.
Yeah, but just getting up and moving. You don't even have to.
Should
do
I start drinking again?
You have to start drinking again. How would you not?
All right, so, but that's not uncommon.
No, that's
that people,
so popular.
That blood flow from their, let's say, from your heart to your legs is cut off because you're sitting all the time. Is that a common thing that you have that kind of pain?
It's a combination of, you know, circulation issues, nerve issues, right? So when you're sitting on your arse, you know, you don't have your legs, your feet, your ankles, your knees, your hips taking up the compression of gravity. You're sitting right on your spine. So you're squishing the spine down. Your hips are flexed at 90 degrees.
And then I'm sitting like this.
Nah, you probably sit like a jerk.
So what I do is I'll spread my legs out like a porn star.
I wish I didn't see that.
Like a French porn star as the show's going on.
Can I unsee that?
People can only see from my chest up. So they can't see me doing it, but I'm sitting in the room like this with my legs completely spread like
I
I'm having a baby.
People can see what
is
I'm
that,
seeing right
is that good?
No.
Or that doesn't work either?
That doesn't do anything.
So
you got to get up.
What you're saying is I should smoke reefer and drink.
Yeah, I think you should probably just retire and go to bed.
Alright,
so it's over.
So you're down at Life and they teach you how to be a chiropractor. Was it hard learning everything? And then when you got out, so I knew you at a very young age, at the beginning of your career, I knew you to be working for this doctor locally. We'll just leave him out of it, the name. So you were working for this guy, and you were like his assistant or something. It was like your first gig.
Right.
Am I wrong?
Ish, yeah. I mean, I was renting out space from him. Yeah, I had my own thing going on, but yeah, it was in his office. All the tables were there.
But I always saw you.
That was it, yeah.
Why didn't I see him?
Because we had two different practices, but we were in the same location.
Want to light the lamp on DraftKings and FanDuel this NHL DFS season? Then join DailyRoto.com and learn from the best daily fantasy sports players. Get updated fantasy hockey projections for NHL DFS, line combinations, and build stacks for tournaments in the DailyRoto NHL DFS lineup optimizer. If you are playing daily fantasy hockey without using DailyRoto, you are doing it wrong. Enter the promo code ACTION for a 10% discount. That's promo code ACTION for a 10% discount.
Hi, Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Do you remember the first time I came to see you, what it was for?
Dude, I remember every second
what was
of the
it?
First time. Your wife called. She goes, my husband blew out his, I think it was your neck, your shoulder or
yeah.
something. It was your neck. You couldn't turn your neck.
Yeah.
And that you're a super important person, that you had a huge job in New York City, and that nobody was open or nobody could take you right now. And if I had any time, and I'm like,
I was
like,
in agony.
Know, yeah, you were in agony. It was like literally during my lunch time. I'm like, yeah, all right, whatever. I'll take him. What's your name? And then she gave me a name, and I'm like, big person, New York City, Pharrell. Interesting. I wonder if it's the guy I know from the radio. Because, again, I heard you down in Atlanta. I heard you, like, you know, I've kind of known you for a little bit. And you came literally right in, and you walked in, and I'm like, I'm looking for Dr. Pete. And I'm like, I'm Dr. Pete, and I know exactly
wait,
who you
wait,
are.
Wait, wait, wait. Do that again. That was really good.
I'm looking for Dr. Pete.
That's you know? Really good. Now I have another backup plan for when I'm on vacation surfing. We'll get Dr. Pete Wohl to fill in for Pharrell, and they'll think it's me. That sounded really good.
Dude, in a second, I knew who you are. Obviously, I don't know if anybody could feel my energy coming through this microphone right now, but our energies matched, and from then it was, so I remember every second of it.
But you cured me in like a matter of one or two trips. I had my problem solved.
I thought you were going to say like 1 or 2 seconds. It took me a minute, or 2 minutes.
I know you fixed it and snapped me, and it was like a sexual revolution. I had never had my neck snap like that. You know, I've always said that to you, like snapping. When you're snapping me, I come into your office, I'll go like, Pete, I need you to snap me.
Yeah.
Or I'll come to your house and say, Pete, you got to snap me. I'm in agony. I popped out. Snap me. And then you're like, I think you're, are you sensitive about that phrase?
Not
snap
even a little
me.
Bit. I know there's a lot of chiropractors out there that don't like cracking. You crack an egg. That's a joke.
They don't like that.
Doesn't matter to me, man. Let's go. Let's just help people. Let's get people feeling better, man. I don't care what you call me.
All right, so
just call me.
So you were working with this guy, had your own little thing going in there. If I'm wrong, tell me. But I remember you just wanted out of there. You wanted your own clinic. You wanted your own office. You wanted your own shop. You wanted your own place. Had you met Dr. Kelly in Atlanta as well? Is that where you met
no,
her?
No, so I had finished up my chiropractic career up in St. Louis at Logan University. I was doing all my clinical work there. I was finishing up my outpatient clinic work up over there. And she actually was starting chiropractic school when I went up there to go start.
And she was in St. Louis?
Work. She was in St. Louis, yeah.
And where was she from originally?
So originally Buffalo, New York, but she did high school and everything in Michigan.
Oh, that's right. So she had never been from around here like you had been.
No. Upstate New York, yeah, no.
So some chick from Buffalo that ended up in Michigan, that ended up at Logan in St. Louis.
Yeah, Chesterfield, Missouri.
So she was at Logan too,
yeah.
Starting, and you were doing clinical work.
Yeah.
And then you met her, and then you guys started having a steamy affair.
Yeah, I mean, I remember. It was an orientation for all the new people that were coming into school. They had it at like a local bar. So it was that first night that everybody was there, and I was with a crew of people that had come up from Atlanta to do their clinical work over there.
Right.
And she had walked in with a little bit of a crew as well. And of course, I'm sitting there with my boys. I'm like, all right, I'll take that one in the middle, you know? And of course, Dr. Kelly was the one in the middle. She immediately starts walking over.
So wait, you had to pick someone to help?
No. It was just like I was being an idiot. I was like, so I'll take that girl home tonight. You know, that one of those things. Yeah, she was gorgeous.
All right.
She's
so
hot, you know.
I knew that. So like in college, you were that, I want her.
I want her.
And then somehow, how did it happen?
I don't know, magical, right?
So that's you look at me, crazy. You look at her. I don't
but
know
it's
how
pretty
I
crazy.
Got her, right?
So no, it's not. Nice. I don't think so. You're a good looking fella. So, and she was a hot chick. And then what? You just started hitting on her?
I mean, this may be a boring story for everybody else, but I remember she immediately walks in with this crew of people and goes right to this dude that I had known from Atlanta because he was a bouncer, right? He was into MMA, huge beefy like guy, and I was promoting. I was a guy from New York. I came down to Atlanta. I wanted to make a few bucks, so I did a little bit of promotion. So I knew the bouncers at all the clubs and the bars and stuff like that, right? So I knew this guy, not super well, but I knew him good enough. And she immediately goes over there and starts talking to him. I'm like, what? Well, how does he know her already, man? This is ridiculous.
What
I know this dude.
Here?
Yeah, what? So I'm getting all a little bit jealous, of course, right? So she stops talking to him, goes off to the thing. I wait about 5 minutes because I want to get the scent off a little bit. But as soon as I thought it was all good, I went to approach him and said, hey, dude, what's going on? I haven't seen you since Atlanta. I didn't even realize you were coming up here. You know, started talking a little bit. And then, you know, about a minute or so later, I go to him, like, hey, by the way, who's that girl you were just talking to? So, you know, Dr. Eric, he's like, what, 6'3", 6'4", big, turns to me, turns bright red because he's got that Irish in him, right? He goes, that's my effing sister. Don't even effing think about it.
Oh, my God.
Right? And he's looking down at me, and I'm like, oh, okay.
Sorry, bro.
Yeah, so, well, it turns out I didn't listen to him. I think we actually hung out that night, and then by her birthday, we were dating, which was in March, so she just had her birthday, so. But that's how I met Dr. Kelly.
Wow, so when you got out of Logan and you were ready to work in the world, she was still there and had to finish.
Had 3 years. Yeah, she had 2 or 3 years left. Yeah.
So she still had to, you know, keep going there. So what did you do? Did you stick around St. Louis or did you come back here?
No, I came straight back here.
So you came back here and then you guys had like a long distance thing going?
Yeah, we did.
And how did that work? Was that any good at all?
Yeah, no. I mean, listen, absence makes the heart go fonder, right? So, yeah, I was flying her out here every month. I mean, she still holds it to me today. In 3 years, I probably only went out there maybe 3 times to St. Louis, right? I mean, listen, St. Louis is all right, but this is New York City, dude. I mean, come on. I'm bringing you out here, and, you know, we're starting to hang out. We're starting to go to the clubs and the restaurants around here. So it wasn't horrible for her.
So you were going there a few times, but she came out here more than you went there?
A ton, yeah. I have to give her credit.
And then how were you doing that? Because you had a job? You could afford it?
No, so I opened up my own practice, as you were saying, right? And to go into the story of that, you said I had to get out and do my own thing and a little bit of a better thing. So that guy, and, you know, try not to give too much deep. By the time I got out in 03, 04, he had been in practice for about 30 years. I think he opened up his office in the late 70s, right?
That particular
office. That
office. And he was still in the same place.
I mean, come on, you were there, man. Wood paneling on the wall, shag carpet, the popcorn stucco nastiness.
Right.
The bathroom in that thing had more crust and lime on it. It was disgusting.
It was
you couldn't even fit in the bathroom. It was awful.
It was 70s.
So it wasn't my style, but it was a good place for me to get started.
Right.
But yeah, I was itching to get the heck out of there. Absolutely.
So you were making a little bit of scratch there, and then you were able to bring her out to New York and everything like that. So when you were there, I know you were plotting to get your own place because I was friends with you at that point. Once I came to see you.
You were involved.
Once I came to see you, we hit it off.
Yeah.
As friends pretty quickly. I think I started seeing you. You were constantly helping me out with my various maladies and problems. And then what? You were plotting to get her to move to New York. Were you guys like on the phone with dreams of having a business together?
No.
Or you won't admit that? Like,
no.
That was not even it, the case at the time at all.
No.
She was going to do her own thing. You were going to do your own thing.
Yeah, because you remember, right? So I was doing that gig in that guy's office for a little
bit.
And just to make a little bit of guaranteed scratch, I was doing some coverage work for some docs in the city on the off days, right? So I was doing like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, maybe Saturday in Northern Jersey, then Tuesdays and Thursdays, right? Just to make a few bucks. I would go out and, you know, cover for docs that were sick or, you know, that type of deal. And I ended up getting involved with a team out of Northern Jersey where they had just lost a doctor. I think either the doctor had gotten sick or who moved away or something like that. And they needed just some coverage for temporarily. And so I went in there, you know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and then they couldn't find anybody else. So they gave me a small position. You just go there every couple of days, you know, just do that for me for a while.
Right.
I turned out be a little bit successful in there. I was bringing some work in the air and in a location, so I ended up buying into that practice over there as well.
And where was that?
It started in West New York, down in Hudson County.
That was the one. I've been to that one.
You've been to that one as well.
And that's the guy that you golf with all the time.
That's the guy I golf with all the time, yeah.
And what was his first name again?
That's a little bit different now, but back in the day, it was Vic. You know Vic. You've met Vic before. That's my partner over there. So.
I remember.
So it started with the two of us. There was other partners in there. We ended up buying them out. And now we've grown that thing into, we've got 10 offices down there now that we're running. So we got those 10, and then we got the two up with Kelly.
So when it started, you had the thing going here. And then you started doing the stuff in West New York.
Yeah.
When did you start going down there? In about 2005, 6, 7?
That was probably before then. I probably got the gig at 04, maybe 05.
So 15 years later, that one seed turned into 10? Did you say 10 offices?
10 offices.
And all 10 offices are in West New York?
No, we got offices all over northern New Jersey. We got West New York. I got one in Jersey City, Bayonne, East Orange, Elizabeth, Plainfield, Sea Caucus, Perth,
Jesus,
Amboy,
dude.
Yeah, Saddlebrook, Patterson, we're all over the place.
So that thing started blowing up, and what was she doing? She got out of Logan and came here, and what did she do? Was she working in the city?
No, not yet. Her first job was in Elmsford, out in Westchester, and she was working for a real big shot chiropractor who had like a consulting gig and everything like that.
Right.
And so she was working like 9.5 days a week for like 18 cents a day type of thing.
Right.
And she was just getting killed. I don't even think she made it a year there, but you know, she was doing that for a little while. And then one of her friends that she graduated with, they were like, why don't we do something in the city? And then they started opening up in the city, and that's where things started to grow a little bit.
I remember when she was going to the city. So you're booming and you're doing great out here in North Jersey and in West New York, which is, just so people know, it's right near Jersey City and right near Manhattan.
Yeah.
But it's on the Jersey side. What I want to know is, when she was working and working in Westchester and then working in the city, and then you started becoming successful with your operations, was there still no talk of you merging, and was there jealousy because you were older and had done a little bit more and got out earlier and had been done and working in the world, that you were ahead of the ball than her? Was there any of that going on?
No, I don't think so, because at one point she got this sweet place that she was working at in Manhattan where she was taking care of some of the coolest cats on the planet. You know, a lot of famous people, a lot of movie stars, very wealthy financiers type of thing. And so she was loving that gig over there.
So, she didn't care what you were doing?
Care less. She could care less. So.
Man, what did you think?
Well, I was loving that too, man. We were getting freaking tickets to everything.
So you guys were dating at the time.
We were dating.
So you were both working two different crazy jobs all day long, every day, and barely had time to sleep. And then you guys were like having some kind of steamy affair at the same time?
Yeah, man. The romance was building. Absolutely.
All right. So at what point do you walk away from the gig with all the celebrities and movie stars to decide you're going to get married and you're going to get into business with your husband who does the same thing as you? Some people would say that that's crazy.
It's nuts. It is nuts. I'll tell everybody it's nuts. She still holds it over my head that I dragged her out of this amazing practice in Manhattan, which I didn't, by the way. She was still doing that a couple of days a week. But it came to a head. This practice, if you remember, we were talking about the guy from the 1970s with the wood paneling, everything like that.
With the popcorn ceiling.
Popcorn ceilings. The whole idea of this was, this dude was going to retire at some point. I was just going to take over his practice. But 4 years, 5 years down the road, this guy is not doing
anything.
No
signals.
No signals. No nothing. And I'm like, dude, this was supposed to happen in a matter of a couple of years.
Now you're aging.
I'm like growing out of this office.
Popcorn Central.
It wasn't me. You know, right?
I mean, know.
So
you were tripping.
I'm like, we got to go. We got to go. But I can't do it by myself because I'm only here a few days a week. Right? And if I want to do what I want to do, it's going to be a full-time operation. I'm going to need help. So who am I going to ask? I'm not going to ask a stranger. So that's when I finally spoke to Dr. Kelly.
So wait a minute. You said to her, why don't we start a business together?
Yeah.
What was her reaction?
She was not very happy, I don't think.
Seriously?
She didn't want to leave. I don't remember the exact timing, but I think before she had gotten involved with this super practice in the city,
right.
We were saying that, okay, she'll do that part-time. So we might have talked about it beforehand so we could build this practice up over here.
But she wanted to keep the other one. How did you convince her to walk away when she didn't want to at all? Like, what kind of sway did you have going there, Sergeant?
I have no idea. I mean, you tell me. I don't know. I got you involved.
She's very, you know, demanding, opinionated, strong.
No, Dr. Kelly?
She's a strong-willed woman. Yeah, like,
absolutely.
She's no joke.
She's a stud.
She's intense. No one tells her what to do.
Correct.
She's going to make her own decisions in life. She's super cool. You know, she's the kind of woman I like. She's hot, and she makes her own splash. She doesn't need any help. She'll do whatever she wants, whether
right.
you like it or not. I'm going here with or without you.
That's right.
Am I wrong?
No. When we first started dating, and I had to introduce people to her, like, I'm letting her know she's coming into town. And they're like, well, how would you describe her? I'm like, well, she's kind of me with boobs type of thing, you know? Kind of, you know, outgoing, type A, strong personality, that type of thing. And I love that, man. I guess
that turns you on.
Yeah.
But when you had to convince her to walk away, how did you do it?
She knew that we could grow this back.
You can't even explain it?
I can't even explain.
Did she convince you? Did she call you a wussy at any point?
She calls me a wussy every
day.
Did
she tell you you didn't have the stones to pull it off? Did she think that you would fail? Did she ever say, you can't even do this? We can't even do this together. Or did she say, we will kick ass and take names together? Let's do it. Was it easy or hard?
The decision to make that we're going to do this together was easy. The building of the practice and getting married, having a family, and then trying to get some separation between business and personal life, that is the most complicated thing. I mean, anybody who's ever been in business with their significant others can probably attest to this as well.
Not a lot of people do it.
It's so hard.
Not a lot of people do it.
On top of that, we're both in the same profession, right? So if things happen within the profession or whatever it is, insurance reimbursements, it affects us both. It's not like she's a teacher and I'm a chiropractor, and when my down times are coming, she's fine, or when her down times are coming.
Like most people.
Going in, we're riding and dying together.
Right, so this is an unbelievable story. So it is so strong, the effort that Dr. Wohl is giving us today, that he has now crossed over. He's like the people that die and they cross over, and then people start talking to people, you know, like spirits. John Edwards, didn't he have a show where he used to talk to dead people?
Yeah,
like, Pete is so good, this story, that we're going to make part two.
Oh, my.
Part two coming up with Dr. Wohl. He has topped all others. The FOTB pod, usually a one-hour show with guests. He's going to break the sound barrier and go the distance with part deux. It's unbelievable. Part dos coming up with Dr. Pete Wohl, a fascinating guy. And he's been known to rub down jock straps at Clemson.
Want to be the next Daily Fantasy Millionaire? Dunk on your NBA DFS competition with DailyRoto.com and dominate on FanDuel and DraftKings this season. Compete with the pros with DailyRoto.com, Optimizer, and the most accurate projections in NBA DFS, plus lineup alerts, breaking news, late swap support, and much more. Save 10% on winning NBA DFS advice with promo code DUNK. Visit DailyRoto.com/dunk to learn more.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Para mi familia, siempre estoy en mi mejor momento. Por eso también quiero lo mejor en mi cocina. Y eso significa solamente huevos de Eggland Best. Siempre tienen un sabor tan fresco y delicioso, con 6 veces más vitamina D, 10 veces más vitamina E y 25% menos grasas saturadas que los huevos comunes. Entonces, ¿por qué darle menos a tu familia cuando pueden tener lo mejor? Eggland's Best. Mejor sabor, mejor nutrición, mejores huevos.